You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to OK Boomer, and here I am once again without my beautiful co-host Victoria Greenwood and with Kai. Anyway, so we'd like to thank the Pineapple Hill Saloon, who's been our sponsor through this whole thing, where we celebrated Italy kicking England's butt yesterday in her saloon, having onion rings, tater tots, burgers, chili, you name it. It was just a blast. So it's funny. I do this show with Victoria Greenwood called OK Boomer. And not that like we're a married couple, but she's been gone for 3 weeks, and this has become like a guy fest, and now we're having booze on the show. It's like the wife's on vacation, the husband opened up the man cave, and you never know what's going to happen. So as you have gained to love and respect Kai Helmers to my right, to his right is another buddy of mine who happens to be a Tarzana native and one of the top liquor dudes in the entire United States, who brought a plethora of bourbon for Kai and I to imbibe on this night. I'd like to welcome the one and only, the infamous Jimmy Pizer from Tarzana, California. By the way, for those of you that don't know, Tarzana, California, named after Tarzan.
Absolutely.
The character. Jimmy Pizer, how are you?
I'm doing great. If I had a tail, I'd be wagging right now.
Nice, nice. So I have known you through vodka, tequila, and you started with Jim Beam 15 years ago with our sponsor, Angela Marsden.
That's right. She was our Knob Creek ambassador.
Look at that. And now you're on Whiskey Row.
Yes, I am. I'm actually with a beautiful company called Levesque. Beer, wine, and spirits, and we've just launched a beautiful whiskey called Whiskey Row, and I'm looking forward to tasting you guys on it.
We've already started imbibing.
Yes, we have.
Let me ask you a question. How long have you been in the liquor business?
Oh, wow. You have to ask me that. 30 years. 30 years.
Is it like, got to be like your second or third job total?
Well, I'll tell you what. You're right. It probably was. I worked for a market, Gelson's Market, and then I worked for another company, and I got into the liquor business. So,
now, have you seen dramatic changes in your business?
Throughout the years, yes. The one good thing in our business right now, I think, and a lot of people might be shocked, but I think the women are in our business right now, and they're really killing it. They're taking charge, and they're doing very well, and I'm actually really proud to see that.
Okay, that was a shameless plug of the day. Anyway, so
wow,
I'm just saying, who cares about who you salespeople? I'm talking about the liquor itself, because I see more variety of brands now. Kai, how many different brands do we see in a typical bar that we didn't see while we were growing up? In our bar, you had Dewar's, Jameson, Jack Daniel's, beer.
Mm-hmm. That's about the lineup. It's not quite the same way anymore, is it?
No.
Well, I'll tell you what. As far as whiskeys and bourbons go, people aren't drinking as much right now, but they're drinking better. And I'm seeing that with a lot of our brands, because we have a lot of high-end brands. And bourbon, by the way, just in case you didn't know this or not, but it's America's native spirit.
Yes.
Like tequila is to Mexico and cognac is to France and scotch is to Scotland. So, by the way, you're doing your patriotic duty by drinking it.
And for those of you, I'll add this, it's also in the congressional record on how bourbon is allowed to be called bourbon, on where it can be distilled, how it can be distilled, even to how the casks are distilled.
Good point. Yeah. But you can make bourbon anywhere in the United States. Predominantly 95% of it's done in Kentucky because of it's actually the first place, it's the birthplace of bourbon. Their water source, it comes from natural limestone creeks and rivers. So 95% of it comes from Kentucky, but you can make it anywhere in the United States.
Now, it has to be made in the United States, and then there's a certain ratio of 51%
corn? 51%
corn
by law,
right,
is part of the mash bill. By law. It's got to be aged in new American oak barrels, and it's got to be aged for a minimum of 2 years.
Right, and that American cask barrel can only be used once?
Yes.
And that is it?
That's it. We actually take our barrels and we ship them to Scotland. Scotland will use our barrels. Tequila, we'll ship them to Mexico. They'll age our tequila in the bourbon barrels, and we ship them to Canada as well.
What do they use them in Canada for? Snow bobbing?
Canadian whiskeys.
I thought like snow snow bobbing or whatever they do up there in Canada.
Well, there's a lot of stuff behind the bourbons.
Now, liquor runs through cycles. So I remember when everybody drank scotch.
Sure.
Then there was the whole vodka thing in the 90s. You had Absolut. You had, you know, St. Elmo's Fire, and vodka was the big drink.
Mm-hmm.
Bourbon has made an amazing comeback.
Sure has. It really has. Again, when I say America's native spirit, a lot of people take pride in it. And the taste profile's there. It's a little on the sweeter side. Just a beautiful dark spirit. It's versatile. And it's one of my favorite cocktails.
Bourbon's always, though, Jim. Bourbon's always had a terrific, solid following.
Sure has.
But in the last few years, when we've gone into some of the more craft-oriented styles, I think the following now is starting to expand, and people are starting to appreciate a drink they might not have had
sure.
as much as they at all, actually, as they were growing up. But it's an expanding brand, and I think that's good for the
industry.
Well,
that's a great analogy. I credit that to a lot of the bartenders in our industry. The bartenders are the most important people in our business, and they're making it drinkable for a lot of people now. So,
hey, Kai, do you know why Frank Sinatra drinks bourbon?
We've talked about this. I do, but tell the story.
No, I asked you. I'm bringing you into the conversation because while you're talking, Jimmy's going to pour.
You got it. So I'm going to pour you a little of the... Go ahead.
Well, I forget the year, but it was a long... I think it was the early 1950s, and Frank Sinatra is sitting at one of the great New York bars. I think it might have been Toots Shores. And Jackie Gleason turns around to Frank and says... And Frank was a Scotchman back in the day.
He was a doers guy.
He was a doers and water guy. And Jackie Gleason, the great one, turned around to him and says, Frank, I have a new drink for you to try. And lo and behold, he poured him a Jack Daniels. And from that day forward, Jack Daniels and Frank Sinatra became very good friends.
Inseparable.
Synonymous with respect
sure.
to the world of Jack Daniels drinking.
And before someone writes in on our stupid page, yes, Kai and I know Jack Daniels is not a bourbon. It is a sour mash.
It's a sour mash whiskey. We understand that.
Well, it's still made like a bourbon, but they add flavor to it when they do the charcoal filtering.
And it's not 51% corn.
But it is 51%
is
corn,
it?
Ralph. Yes, it is. It's to consider it a bourbon, it's got to be you have to have no flavors added. So Jack Daniel's actually charcoal filters their whiskey. And that takes away the whole bourbon aspect.
And that's why it's called a sour mash?
Yeah, it's an American. It's a straight Tennessee whiskey.
And before you put that up to your lips, Beiser, you gavone, you.
What?
Please tell the audience what we will be imbibing on, what its main characteristics are.
Well, right now we're going to drink the Whiskey Row. This is our four-year-old, so this is great for your entry-level drinkers. This is going to be a little more on the sweeter side. It's a very good drink for mixing. If you're new into the bourbon drinking business, I would suggest trying a nice 2 to 4 year old. This is right up your alley.
What's the price point on that?
Well, right now you're looking in the mid-20s for this bottle, which is very...
So what would the markup be like in a typical bar?
Well, the bars would probably...
$12?
Like around the maker's mark.
$12 to $14?
$12 to $14. Right now, they're getting up there a little higher than the $15 to $16 in Beverly Hills, $17.
Right. Oh, and by the way, for the ladies watching the show this evening, one of the great things about bourbon is that there's no sugar in it. There are no carbohydrates in it. It's practically a diuretic. As a matter of fact, it would be on Jenny Craig, but she just can't come to terms with the Liquor Association. So
the short answer here is if you want to lose weight, drink bourbon.
That is correct.
We don't care how you drink it. Just drink it.
So let me.
That's just the way it is. And by the way, when you're drinking bourbon, we drink it like this. We like to nose it.
That's right.
And keep your mouth open when you're nosing that, because you want to get it all through the insides. If you close your mouth, you're not going to get it all. Then you want to look at it and take check out the color. Then you want to taste it.
You know, I have to be.
And
I have
we
to
do
tell
the Kentucky.
The truth. Sometimes I can't be bothered with all of that.
Well, we do the thing called the Kentucky Chew.
We
want to taste
chew.
It.
I have a question for you. I was in a whiskey bar a couple of years back. You're probably aware of it, Seventh Graham.
I know very well.
So I ordered a Pappy. I wanted to have a Pappy. They had a Pappy Van Winkle on the shelf, so I ordered a Pappy. He took an eyedropper and put one drop of water in my pappy. What was the reason for that?
Probably to break it up and open it up a little bit so you can... It just opens it up. It's like putting an ice cube in it.
Interesting.
Sure.
Do you do that when you drink a good bourbon?
I like mine with an ice cube, a nice big ice cube. It opens it up. It just brings out a lot of those natural sugars and the caramels from the wood and just brings out a lot of those flavors.
I'm very similar. I like it with an ice cube.
Sure.
But I would never purposely add water. But it's becoming very fashionable to do right. that. Well, and I understand the science behind that because it does break it up just sure. a bit and let the aromatics come out.
Well, us whiskey drinkers and bourbon drinkers, we're not snobby. We like to drink it. We're not like the big wine guys of the world who are sniffer swirlers. We just like to drink good stuff.
I'm glad you just said that because, you know, when you think of bourbon, you think Kentucky, Tennessee, you think sure. Arkansas, Alabama, the whole Redneck Riviera. What is the bourbon culture in Los Angeles, Boston, San Francisco, Chicago, Denver? You know, those types of cities that they think they're a little bit more elite. Well, than our southern cities.
Well, like I said, people aren't drinking as much, but they're drinking better. And in those cities, there a lot of people are sophisticated, and they want to be seen drinking something good. You go to any great bar here in L.A., people want to be seen drinking something good.
I don't do a lot of what's called a cocktail, which is a mixed drink.
Sure.
And the cocktail came about during Prohibition because they were basically drinking bathwater gin. They had to hide the taste somehow. So I'm more of a straight booze guy, you know, on the rocks or neat. But this one that you just had as taste sure. would make an amazing Manhattan.
Yeah, absolutely.
The little bit of backstory on that is Ralph and I both enjoy a good Manhattan. And at our club recently, we discovered one of the bartenders makes one of the best Manhattans you'll ever have. So we've been discussing what can we have as the base liquor in there.
Right.
And I think you're right. This might...
Well,
this
I knew
might...
I liked you guys. Because I'm a Manhattan guy.
See?
Now, he and I drink a different type of Manhattan.
Well,
you drink the perfect Manhattan.
I like a perfect Manhattan. Okay. Which is a little bit of... For those who don't know, that means it has a little bit of sweet vermouth and dry vermouth.
There you go.
A regular Manhattan just has sweet vermouth. So the perfect Manhattan takes a little bit of the sweetness out. And to me, smooths out the sweetness.
Interesting. Okay. I like the sweet vermouth in it, and I like a little bit of cherry juice.
I don't put the cherry in. I put a twist of black, because I'm trying to get away from the sweetness. The sweetness is not for me.
Oh, he drinks with one pinky out.
He does.
He
probably drinks out of a martini glass, too, which
I
do, yes.
Which I do, too.
So do I. How else would you drink a Manhattan?
We think it breaks protocol to put a Manhattan into
right.
a rock.
How else would you drink it? You know, the only time I drink a Manhattan is when I'm alone or with someone. That's it. All I got.
You know, when I was married, I'd go to the bar. My wife would say, "Who was at the bar?" I'm like, "Nobody." She said, "You drank alone?" I said, "No, I was a bartender."
Nice.
I wasn't alone. Hey, Jimmy, before we get on to the next one,
yeah.
Obviously, you sell these to bars.
Sure.
You sell these to restaurants.
Yes, we do.
So your knowledge of the bar crowd, or not the bar crowd, but the bar scene in Los Angeles has to be better than most.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows the Spagos or the Dantanas or the highfalutin places, I like to say.
Which I like.
Everybody does.
Sure.
But if you didn't want to spend $300 on lunch, what are some of the lower key really cool joints in the city that you get to see selling your bourbon?
Well, there's so many restaurants and bars out there. You know, Monty's Steakhouse in Woodland Hills. Of course, you know, the Palm restaurants, of course. But, you know,
one of
the Pineapple Hills, you know.
The Palm is one of my favorite.
Great restaurant.
I've been
Mastro's.
I've been going to the Palm restaurants since 1973 in New York City.
Sure.
It's always a good experience.
I have a couple to ask you about because they're my favorites, and I'm not sure where they stack up in your world. All three happen to be in Koreatown.
Sure.
The Prince, do you know it?
I've heard of it.
Okay. HMS Bounty?
I know it very well. I love it. Old school.
Absolutely old school.
Yep.
And Taylor's.
Love Taylor's.
Okay, so a little background on all three since you know it.
Sure.
And Kai, I'm not sure if you're aware of them. The HMS Bounty is the ground floor of the Gaylord Apartments.
Sure.
That was built by Gaylord Wilshire, and at the time it was the tallest high-rise living in Los Angeles, directly across the street from the Ambassador Hotel. And for those of you that are history buffs, that's where RFK was murdered.
Wow.
On the night of the DNC convention.
My wife used to work at the Ambassador.
Nice.
And has wonderful stories to tell about the people there, the clubs there, the bars there.
And the HMS Bounty is where the media set up their ground zero for that assassination story. Another little tidbit, which I saved, and Kai and I love this gentleman. It was Winston Churchill's favorite bar in Los Angeles.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Interesting. See, I learn something new every day.
The HMS Bounty. The other one is called the Prince. The Prince is a block south of it. I forget the name of the street. It is also, it's the basement of an apartment building. Mm-hmm. It's a Korean chicken place. They have red naga hide booths. There's a bell on the booth. If you need a waiter or a waitress, you have to hit the bell. That's the only way to get service. Training Day shot a lot in there. Mad Men shot a lot in there. It's just classic L.A. All of the interior are like these giant statues of knights in armor and gothic pictures. Very, very cool.
Sure.
And then the other one is Taylor's Steakhouse, which one of my favorite steakhouses in L.A.
What a great restaurant. You're calling out some good places. It's iconic.
Well, before Kai showed up, you were telling me, you know, you felt Dantana had the best steak in Los Angeles. And I said, no, it has the best New York strip in Los Angeles, without a doubt. Taylor's is a traditional steakhouse.
Sure.
So you can get a New York strip. You can get a porterhouse. You can get my favorite, the bone-in ribeye. And Kai, it's $40.
That's a price you can't
beat. You cannot beat that price.
Especially in L.A.
You can't beat it,
you know. No, because if you go like just a mile and a half east of there, you hit the Pacific Dining Car, and it's $125 of a steak.
Are they still open?
Yeah.
Oh, they are.
Okay. That one is Santa Monica closed.
Oh, and that's right. By the way, a wonderful place to have a cocktail or a meal. I love the Pacific Dining.
Open 24 hours, seven days a week. How's that?
Never closed.
How's that?
It's a wonderful place.
Wow.
Who are your favorite bartenders in town? I know Michael from Dantana's is no longer with us.
I miss Michael from Dantana's. And, you know, there's so many great bartenders out there. I love Steve over Carmine's. Mm-hmm. He's a class actor.
That's in Century City?
Yeah, and Rafi took over for Mikey over at Dantana's. But there's just so many great bartenders out there. Carlos over at Spago. I can't even think of all of them. There's so many good ones.
See, this is what's problem. I have to apologize for my friend Jim Pizer. He goes to all of the places that, you know, Variety would have talked about or the Hollywood Reporter, when in fact he knows so many cooler people. Like, who's the bartender at Casa Vega that's been there for 40 years?
Oh, that's I was just there earlier today, and his I forgot his name. He's going to kill me. I think it's Antonio.
It's Antonio.
Great guy.
Been there 40 years.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Now, that's a cool bartender.
That's a staple right there.
By the way, I believe he's in top five of oldest bartenders in the same location.
Just might be.
Musso and Frank. You have Sonny Bones. Sonny Bones and Musso and Frank.
I love Sonny.
That's what I'm talking. How about Smokehouse?
The Smokehouse. You know what? I don't know who the bartender is there.
Okay.
You know, they're probably going to kill me for that.
There you go. I don't know why I have Jimmy Pizer. Oh, I know why I have Jimmy Pizer on the show. Can I get another cocktail, please?
Absolutely.
That's why I have Jimmy Pizer on the show.
Absolutely. This is the one I'm gonna leave with you tonight, and you get to take this one home.
So, Kai, I have a question for you, because as you said in the car on the way back from the Pineapple Hill Saloon yesterday after Italy crushed England.
crushed?
Crushed, absolutely. Crushed. No, they crushed England. And we were talking about places you go, and you're like, now I like the Pineapple Hill Saloon. And your wife, the beautiful and talented Kate, said, you don't change places, Kai. And you're like, I don't change the places I go, I don't change the women in my life, and I don't change the cigars. So
it's a pretty simple metric, isn't it?
I understand that. So do you have, other than your little bubble, what are some of your favorite places in L.A. to imbibe?
Oh, boy. That's a long conversation. Anywhere from the dive bars, such as Hercules down in Manhattan Beach.
Hercules?
Hercules.
Jimmy Pies is not a real place.
Are you familiar with it?
No, I've never heard of it.
E-R-C-U-L-E-S.
And I know all my bars.
Okay, hold on a second. I need to put things into a parameter.
Sure.
The bars had to have been opened in the 20th century.
Oh.
And I love down and dirty bars, too. I love the old school down and dirty bars.
Hercules is actually advertised as one of the oldest L.A. bars. I don't know when it opened, but it was around the turn of the last
century. Where is Hercules?
It's off Manhattan Beach Boulevard and Manhattan Avenue.
God, that sounds like where Critters used to be.
No, it's you could walk to Critters, but it's kind of a long walk.
Okay.
Have you guys ever been to Shea J's?
Love Shea J's.
Oh, what a great place.
By the way, I'm going to get into a little story about Shea J. What are we imbibing on now, my friend?
This is our Shippingsport Whiskey Row, and this is going to be between 6 and 8 year old. We blend them with probably 10 or 12 different small batch barrels. So this is, you're drinking some good stuff here.
So now this one you wouldn't mix, correct?
We don't. You can mix it with anything you want.
No, I'm not talking about the average millennial who knows nothing about life. I'm talking about the sophisticated drinker like ourselves.
It's great in a little snifter like this. Maybe throw a little water in it just to open it up. But you know what? Like I said, we're bourbon guys. We don't care how you drink it. Just drink it. Because if you put Coke in it, okay, it'll be the best whiskey and Coke you ever had. If you put anything in it, it's going to be the best you ever had. But this new...
And by the way, I love that I can make fun of millennials because Victoria is not here. She's not here to put me in my place.
Totally different, isn't it?
By the way, Victoria, you would love Victoria because she's got lineage to the Bourbon Trail.
Oh, does she?
Her family is from that Tennessee-Kentucky line. Sure. So she's missing out.
The Bourbon Trail is so fun.
I have no idea where she is right now, but she's probably going to kill me one day. Shea J. Little trivia about Shea J. You know they're famous for their peanuts.
Absolutely.
Shea J's nuts are on the moon. I don't know if you know that. Not the
that
owner,
would be
his
great.
Peanuts. Armstrong took up Shea J's peanuts in his space flight.
No kidding.
And Shea J's nuts
are. I never heard that.
That is correct.
One of my favorite bars in L.A.
Do you know why the bar is tilted at the end?
You tell me, because I was just going to bring that up.
What happened was they were having a circus down the Santa Monica Pier, and someone brought an elephant up to Shea J's to try Shea J's nuts. And the elephant, while eating the nuts, sat on the bar. And that's why it's tilted.
One of the best-kept secret bars in L.A.
Best-kept secret. That's why John F. Kennedy was stooping Marilyn Monroe back in the back room.
Yeah. You want to see somebody, you want to see a movie star, you go there at 11 or 12 o'clock at night. That's the best hideout.
Or if you want to see a cool movie star, you go there at 10 o'clock in the morning and they're still there.
You're absolutely right. That is so funny. You're right.
So you must get all of this nitty-gritty stories from these bar owners. You got to share a story.
You want me to share a story?
I need a short
story. Can I get down and dirty on a story?
Absolutely. By the way, this isn't going out live, so okay. Go ahead. We'll cut it out in post.
One of my best stories I've had in my career was at Carmine's, actually. So we're sitting at Carmine's, and it must have been about 10 or 11 o'clock at night. We're all sitting at the bar, Joe, Parisi, and all the guys, and Frank. And we're all sitting there.
Frank Stallone. By the way, for you in the studio audience that are watching us live right now, there is a Rocky doll on the shelf at Carmine's restaurant. And it is not Rocky, but it says Rocky on it. But underneath it says Stallone Frank.
That's funny. Well, as you know, a lot of things happen in the L.A. bars, right? And they all happen late night. So Carmine's were sitting there at the bar, and there was a couple in the back booth doing their thing, having fun. It was an older gentleman with a young girl, and they're having fun in the back. And we're all just going, wow, get a room. So next thing I know, they get up, and they go in the restroom, both of them. Well, 10 minutes goes by, and the guy comes walking out of the restroom by himself with a whole bunch of clothes in his hand. And we're like, where's the girl? He comes walking out and goes straight out, right through the bar, and right out the front door. The girl follows out completely naked, right through the restaurant. Good night, guys. Walks right out the door.
Oh, my gosh.
Only in L.A. Only in L.A.
Only in Carmine's. Was Carmine there that night?
I think he was.
He would have went nuts.
God.
You know, Carmine once admitted to me, he goes, I don't know why I've owned a restaurant for 25 years. I don't like people.
He says it all the time.
And for those of you that are listening, please look, you have to go to Pineapple Hill Saloon. They are my only sponsor. So please go there. They're on Moore Park in Van Nuys Boulevard behind the In-N-Out Burger. But also go to Carmine's. First of all, Carmine's retired, so you don't have to worry about seeing him. And Kim is there every night. Kim Papateri is one of the finest restaurant owners in town.
Kim is wonderful.
She's the best.
She's absolutely wonderful. And Steve, the bartender, is one of those classic bartenders. You want ask for the drink he's going to make. He's going to make it perfectly. And he's going to talk to you while he's making it. You can get into a conversation with him. He's one of those throwback bartenders that we don't have enough of anymore.
I agree.
When I was a younger man growing up, I enjoyed going into a bar with a bartender like Steve.
Love him.
You know what you say, Kai, is absolutely true. And we don't think about that often enough. And I'm not sure, Jimmy, on your travels, if you see this, professional bartenders.
Sure.
You know, Dantana's professional bartenders, professional servers as well. Those folks will never leave there. Carmine's. Kim has been working with Steve for over 30 years. That's Steve's profession. And that's why he's a professional at his profession, because that's his job. He's not trying to be an actor or trying to be a model. It's so frustrating. Even in some of the places that Kai and I go to, the service has become so awful because we don't have people that care about the profession of being a bartender or a server or even a host. And it's really, it kind of diminishes the experience.
Their bartenders, their hostesses, their waiters or waitresses, because they're waiting for something else. This is a holding pattern for them. Where we grew up on the East Coast, people looked at these jobs as careers. You had career waiters, career waitresses, career bartenders, career sommeliers. And they did very well. They were able to raise a family, put the kids through school. It was a profession. It was people took pride in it. I'm not saying that's disappeared completely. It's certainly not as prevalent as it used to be. And out here in the West Coast, it's few and far between where you find those people.
Yeah, you're not going to see those Michaels from Dantana's.
And by the way, he put a child through MIT. He put a child through USC. Yeah. He owned a beautiful home up in West Hills.
But I know a lot of the bartenders out there, they take the mixologist bartenders take their jobs very serious. In my business, the bartenders are the most important people in my industry because they're the last person that touches this bottle before it gets in their hand. But like I said, they're not making a career out of it, mm-hmm. which it's very lucrative if they take it serious.
For example, if I was a bartender and this is my career, and you come in with the three new whiskey rows that you have, I would say to you, Mr. Pizer, seat me down. What do I need to know about each one of these bottles?
And I'll show them everything about it. I'll even take them to distillery if I have to.
Right.
Like I said, I want them to know everything about it. And a lot of them want to know about it. It's their business.
Growing up in New York, our next door neighbor was a gentleman named Aldo Bardini. He owned a home. He had three kids, Mark, Janet, and Janice. Jackie, he was the day bartender at 21 Club.
At 21 Club?
Yep.
Wow. My dad used to go to 21 Club. It's closed now. Unfortunately, it didn't survive the pandemic, and that's terrible all in and of itself. The 21 Club was a very special place, and it had been there since, when, the 40s?
Easily, yeah.
And it was wonderful. I missed the 21 Club.
It was in New York City on 21st Street.
Sure.
But that was a professional place. You wore a jacket and tie when you walked in. The bartender, Mr. Bardini, knew exactly what you drank if you were there just once before. Sure. If you were just there once, I don't know how he did it, but he remembered what you had.
Oh, we need some of those here in L.A. We really do. How fun
would
that
be? A small little cocktail lounge off to the side from the major cocktail. There was a little piano bar, and behind the piano bar, they had one of my favorite paintings, and it was Jimmy Durante playing the piano. And that picture hung right behind the bar, and these were back in the days where you could have a cocktail and smoke a cigar.
Sure.
Some of my most pleasurable times by myself was sitting there watching Durante, looking at the picture of Durante playing the piano, smoking a cigar, and having a cocktail. It was wonderful.
Wow.
What do you think your favorite one would be for a cigar pairing?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, my favorite one's going to be this last one here, the Whiskey Row Bottle and Bond.
Okay, again, I hate having to correct my guest. Jimmy Pizer, it's never the last one we're having. It's the next one.
The next one.
It's never the last one. Well, I don't know. You know, what's your? Can we get your boss to call in? I need to.
Ralph always operates on the theory that the best is yet to come.
That's right.
My boss would have a field day right now if we got him on the phone. He would have a field day.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, trust us. This is not the last one we're having. It is the next one.
Here you go.
Language is very important.
Now, this is our bottle in bond whiskey row.
Ooh, this sounds like a 007.
This is actually going to be very dark. Bottle in bond is actually a term that we use in this industry. It's got to be made from one distillery, one actual master distiller, and it's got to be made at 100 proof. Okay, so now you're drinking 100 proof. See the darkness to this? It's a little darker.
Mm-hmm. So who's the master distiller?
Actually, great question. I wish you didn't ask me that. But I
can't fix this in post, pal.
thanks for telling me. I'm not familiar because it's a new brand for us. So I'll check into that.
So those of you that want Whiskey Row, the master distiller is such a secret. It's not even known to those that sell the product. This is the secret sauce of Whiskey Row.
If I told you, I have to kill you.
That's right. It is. That's how exclusive this is. See, that's how you sell, pal.
Cheers, guys.
So now, what should I be expecting?
You know what? I get a lot of burnt, like caramel.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of burnt caramel.
And what's the aging on this process, or is this a non-aged?
This is going to be 9 years. Nine years.
That is a very full flavor.
That is good.
It's very well developed.
Explain to the audience why aging is important.
Well, aging is important because you get a lot of the flavors from the wood. What we do is when we distill one of these products, it comes out looking like water. We call that white dog. And then we put those into barrels. We actually char our barrels to 3 or 4 char. And that brings out that natural sugars from the wood, the caramels. We put that white dog in those barrels, and we age them from a minimum of 2 years. So the longer you age, the more characteristics you're getting from the wood. So this is going to be around a 9-year. You can see it's a lot darker. You get a lot more complexity from the woods. It's just an amazing spirit. I love it.
I love the color of it. And
great.
I'll tell you something. Not only the nose, the taste, the color is a big thing for me when I'm drinking anything.
You know,
it looks right.
I agree with you.
Tastes better.
Sure.
There's a fabulous documentary. I think it's called The Bourbon Trail, and it's on Netflix. And they talk to some of these master distillers. And there was this one African-American gentleman over at Buffalo Trace.
Sure.
And he was saying he's third generation. And their specialty, I think, was their 50-year Buffalo Trace aging process.
Sure.
No one in his family, he's third generation, has ever tasted the bourbon that they distilled at 50 years.
No.
Because they don't live long enough.
Wow.
Because you don't become that level of distiller to your 30s or 40s. It's a 50-year aging period. You're dead by the time you uncask it.
Sure.
Well, that family should hire me as a consultant.
I think you'd be good at it.
But the kids have tasted what their parents have distilled. And that's pretty wild. What I found most amazing is that it's one cask and done.
Sure. Well, we use one barrel by law.
What's the wood of the cask? Do you know?
It's American oak.
American oak?
Yes. So we use the barrels once, like I said
before.
But
you said before you sell them to France.
Yeah, we sell them to Scotland. Scotland uses our barrels, to Mexico.
Ireland.
Yeah.
And by the way, for those of you that are millennials, it's completely vegan.
There you go.
So you can have it as well.
Cheers.
Cheers to that.
That is nice. That's Whiskey Row.
You know, I make fun of millennials on this show. And one of the things I talk about is how many, like, vegans and gluten-free and all of these, whatever, that generation has. And so
sure.
I talk about, like, especially where you grew up as a kid. Remember Memorial Day weekend? Everybody had a barbecue. You'd be riding your bicycle down the street and just salivating over the smell of those barbecues.
If you didn't smell hot dogs and hamburgers.
And you salivated. Today's vegans, they do that when they mow the lawn.
I know. Look at him. He's a comedian, too.
I'm telling you. So where do we find Whiskey Row being sold? Is it at BevMo or Vendome or online?
You're going to find it everywhere now. We just got Trader Joe's to commit to bringing it in. You're going to see it at all your fine wine.
You got Trader Joe's?
Yeah.
Good for you.
We got it. All of our fine wine stores here in L.A. are starting to bring it in now. It's like I said, it's still fairly new, but it's an amazing brand, and it's in the right hands, and we're going to get it out there. And our distributors are NDC, and they do a great job with it. So.
Now, you are the national sales manager?
I'm the state manager.
State manager.
So I handle California, and I help my partner out in Nevada. So
is California your biggest market for this?
California is where we build brands.
Okay.
I mean, like I say.
Even a bourbon?
Absolutely, yes. We sell so much bourbon here in California. It's crazy. But, yeah. New York, Chicago, and L.A. are the three big states.
Well, I would assume New York. New York's a dark liquor town, always has been.
Yes.
You know.
Chicago, too.
But this is where we build brands, right here. This is it. So we got a good thing here.
Are there any restaurants that you know of offhand that we can find your Whiskey Row?
You go to any restaurant right now, and we're starting to get them into all the restaurants right now. So.
They have one off
Craig's,
the top.
Craig's.
Oh, Craig's?
Craig's.
Talk about vegan ice cream.
Yeah. He's got his
I love Craig,
Vegas.
Though.
Yeah.
Were you at his 50th
birthday? Santana's, of course.
Were you at Craig's 50th birthday party?
No, I didn't go to it, unfortunately. But
you know,
I heard all about it.
You know the great MC, Jeffrey Ross?
Of course.
And by the way, this is comedy. It's not serious. So before you get triggered and blow me up on social media, chill. So Jeffrey Ross was emceeing Craig's 50th birthday party, and they're best friends. So Jeffrey Ross gets up and he goes, I love looking at this Craig's restaurant and all of the celebrities that are here tonight. Craig has finally fulfilled his lifelong mission. He opened up a celebrity Olive Garden.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm really happy for him.
He
killed it.
He just absolutely crushed it.
He did a great job.
And look, he started as a bartender at Dantana's, maitre d' at Bartana's, Dantana's, put an investment group together that believed in him, opened up his own restaurant with his own name attached to it.
It turned out to be the hottest restaurant in L.A.
Yeah.
You can't even get a reservation in that place.
I like when people do well.
So do I. So do I. Because, you know, if he does well, we all do well. And and he's a great guy. He really is.
And by the way, speaking of that, you must see this now. Kai and I see it all the time. How are restaurants staffing up? Every restaurant is understaffed.
They are.
Every single one.
You know, it's funny. Did you want to say something?
Go right ahead.
Because you're right. They're so understaffed right now. It's sad. But, you know, let's just get through this whole thing. And once we do, we'll be back to normal again.
I'm scared, though, because I'm not sure if... I think we're still going to lose another 15-20% of our restaurants.
Oh, I hope not.
And sadly, we may lose another X percent of restaurants because they can't find enough workers. This is inconceivable.
It sure is. Yeah.
I was in Rao's last night and talking to Patrick. Four people that they've hired over the last 3 weeks, they've either had to fire or quit because they just don't want to work.
Yeah. They're probably not showing up.
Right. They're just not showing up.
I've spoken to several owners of restaurants in the last 2 or 3 months, and they all say the same thing. We can't find enough cook. We can't find enough workers. Mm-hmm. It's not only front of the house where the customers see it. It's back of the house where all the magic is happening. The cook is cooking, and the sous chef is doing what he does. And
that's sad. I was just in Mammoth last week, and that's a small community, but they're struggling very hard because
they're struggling up in Mammoth.
They don't have enough people to come in and work the restaurants. It's crazy. So
I don't know how we get through it, you know. And there's always the conspiratorial side of me that says, "Is this big restaurants, the Olive Gardens, the Fridays, the BJ's that are doing this to the small business owner?" I don't know, you know, because they can weather any storm.
Sure.
I'm not ready to go there yet, but if you wanted to, you could certainly connect the dots and get there.
Right.
I'd need, I'm, I'll keep my powder dry on that. I'd like to see a little bit more evidence, but I won't discount it.
Yeah.
I won't discount it entirely.
Give it time. We'll be back.
But no, we well, look, we all hope so.
Yeah.
Americans are a very resilient people. We have been. Look what's happening, you know, now to change directions a little bit. Look what's happening in Cuba as of yesterday.
Yeah.
There's an uprising. People yearn to be free. People yearn to be able to earn what they can earn. People, they have a desire to chart their own course.
Sure.
And it's finally building in Cuba where it's hit ahead. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I know there's a spin in the media that this is all about COVID, that the people there are upset they can't get COVID shots. And I'm like, yeah, no one goes to the streets for that.
Yeah.
It just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So
well, we're going to make
this
it
is a thirst for freedom.
It. Thank you. We have a third. You know, it's funny. Thank you for using that terminology, Kai, because it takes me down to the roads like where I love sarcasm. We are so spoiled here. We have a thirst for bourbon. But there are literally people in this world that have a thirst for freedom.
Oh,
they have
beautifully said.
Yeah. You know,
wow.
What we are divided over today in the United States is such bullshit. It's such garbage. It's because we don't have any problems that we're divided.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally because we don't have any problems that we're so divided, because we needed something to fight about. You know, if you look back at some of the hardest times in this country from the 20s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, when there was real struggles in this country, we came together.
Sure.
Now it's bullshit. You know, and it's just getting out of hand.
Who would have ever thought this was going to happen, you know? We were running nice and smooth in 2019, weren't we?
It could not have been predicted.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it could have been predicted, but not by anybody who's going to be taken seriously. They would have been written off as scatterbrains, people who have no firm grip on reality. And yet we saw what we've seen happen.
Yeah.
We ought to have a whole show one night, not to preempt your hosting duties, but on the lead up to COVID, what COVID has done to this country, and on a larger metric, the global economy. What we have done to ourselves, and let's remember, this is a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah.
Sure is.
And we did it to ourselves.
Absolutely. Look, there's always going to be hardship, sickness, disease, famine. But we've never shut it all down before.
No.
Never shut it all down before. And you're right. There were, you know, it was funny. Carmine, as miserable as Carmine is, and I love him like a brother, he said the last 5-6 years of his life in that restaurant were his most enjoyable. They were slammed for lunch and dinner and happy hour. Even Rao's, which forever wouldn't open up their doors before 5:30, had such a crowd that they had to open up at 3 in the afternoon just to suffice the happy hour crowd. We were on Easy Street. Everybody was at rising tides of all boats. Everybody was being risen. And it's a shame. And I don't...
Well...
People smarter than me, 25 years from now, will write an essay on what happened. But I've been saying this is, I don't know.
Well, hopefully it's a short essay.
Right. No, it'll be an in-depth essay on how...
It's going to be a complete indictment of our political and scientific class and the willingness of hundreds of millions, billions of people worldwide to... adopt a sheep-like stance and do what they were told without any real basis of being told to do what they were told to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's a long conversation in here, and there's no way to summarize it in the
couple of minutes we have left. No, but it hurts just so many Americans. You know, do you service Tin Horn Flats in Burbank?
Of course.
What a patriot that kid Alex is.
I think this is an American entrepreneur story.
The way he fought the system, because he needed to eat.
Yes.
It gets right down to that. They were going to shut him down, and he says, I have no way of making a living. Every dime I've had is in this place. What am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
And he fought the law, and unfortunately the law won. But he fought the law. When they shut down his power, he went out and bought generators. and he started running his own electricity and his own kitchen and all of that. When they threatened to padlock his front doors, he took his doors off the hinges. So there was no doors to padlock. This kid fought them every step of the way to stay open. And guess what? No one was being forced to walk into his restaurant. People chose to go there.
And by the way, cool place.
Very cool place. Yeah. Oldest liquor license in Burbank.
Yes. I don't care if it was the worst restaurant in the history of the world.
Yeah.
I really don't.
I have a lot
his stick-to-itiveness, his I will not bend to this artificial, I think it's a story of inspiration.
Well, another restaurant bar called Cronies. Have you heard of it? It's a sports bar in Agora, did the exact same thing. They stayed open the whole time, and they did it because of their employees.
I think I know that place. I think a very famous radio host named Magic Man Allen.
Yes, he goes there.
Yes, he goes there. He speaks about it often. Yes. He supports them because they stayed open, and that's a trek from his house.
Yes.
But yes.
They've got like several different restaurants, and they stayed open because of the same reason.
Right.
They needed to feed their employees. And, hey.
Angela Mars at the Pineapple Hill Saloon, our sponsor on the corner of Moore Park and Van Nuys, her chef has been there for 25 years.
Wow. Is that right?
Yeah. Before she bought the place, he's been there. His wife works with him. Now their child works with them. It's a family thing, and you're supporting the community. And, Jimmy, and you probably know this, how many restaurant owners are not the highest paid person in their restaurant?
They're not. They're not.
There's a bartender that makes more than them. There's a server that makes more than them.
They're worried about paying their employees.
There's a chef that makes, right. Yeah.
You know, that's just the nature of the business. That's the way it is.
And that's why we support people that sell Whiskey Row, because it gives us another reason to go out and support these restaurants.
That's right. There you go. God, I couldn't have said that any better.
Well, that's why I get paid the big bucks. That's why I'm here, Mr. Jimmy Pizer. Jimmy Pizer, where would a person hanging about a town in the city of Angels find a guy named Jimmy Pizer? Where does you hang your hat and imbibe?
I'm old school. So I'll hang my hat at any place that's been around for 50 years or more. That's where I go. I like good old school joints.
But and I like occasional nice, trip I like to nice the Grand Havana room.
Places. Grand Havana Room, yeah, I love that place too.
How could you not?
Now, if you want a good cigar and you want a good cocktail, you go to the Grand Havana Room. And good people, by the way.
By the way, I need you to bring up a place.
Sure.
So it stays in my brain forever. You mentioned it. I'd never heard of it. And you and I are the same age, so we've been drinking about the same amount of years, too long. What was the place Ted Nugent played in the Valley?
Oh, that was called Tennessee Gin and Cotton. And
Tennessee Gin and Cotton, and you cannot get a better name for a bar.
If anybody hears this station, it's just going to go, wow, that's old school.
Yeah.
Now, that was an old bar in the San Fernando Valley in Tarzana, Woodland Hills, right there.
Corbin and Ventura.
Exactly, yes.
And it was a live music venue.
Live music venue, and all Ted Nugent used to play there, and all the old school musicians used to go in there on one side.
Right.
And on the other side, it was all disco.
Get out.
It was disco. It was fun.
Where was Jimmy Pizer? Was he with the white Capizio shoes, or was he with the cowboy boots?
That's funny. I would say back then I was probably wearing cowboy boots.
All right, thank God, because otherwise I was going to call that.
And a neon tank top.
Oh, God.
A what?
Never mind. That's funny. Oh, God.
So Kai, anything in closing you'd like to add about Whiskey Row, about bourbon in general, about Jim Pizer's Jimmy Neutron haircut? Anything you'd like to talk about?
Thanks.
I have no
that.
Comment on the haircut.
Knew that was coming.
But I'm not much of a coif guy. So.
I ain't going bald anytime soon, that's for sure.
I like the Whiskey Row lineup. It's clearly going to be successful.
Because you're a bourbon aficionado.
I know my way around the bourbon menu.
I can tell you do.
Whiskey Row... You're going to find shelf space, and it sounds like you already are. I think the shelf space is going to expand, and I think you've got a tiger by the tail.
I appreciate that. Thank you. We're excited about it.
My favorite, of course, was the third, the more fully developed, the more aged.
That is the bottle and bond.
That's the one that's going home with Ralph O'Dean.
No, that's the one he asked.
They're going to fight over it, everybody.
He gave you the middle one.
You know what? Kai, you have me on age. You can have the older one.
Nice.
See? He can't be nice.
Age before beauty, right?
There's something in the gene pool.
Don't worry, guys. There's a lot more where this came from.
Mr. Pizer, anything you'd like to add on our way out?
I just appreciate you having me on tonight. I had a blast, and it's always good to see you guys. And always fun hanging out with you, Ralph. You know that. I've known you for a long time.
We actually have.
Well, we run into each other at all the cool restaurants and bars in L.A. So,
and then we know all of the same people, which is really scary.
We have a mutual friend of ours that lives in Florida we won't mention, but...
Yeah, we're not going to mention Donna Martinson's name.
That's pretty funny, though.
It is, and she's a tall drink of water. And then to find out that Angela Marsden, the sponsor of the show, used to work for you over at Jim Beam.
Yeah.
Talk about a wild story right there.
That is.
Ladies and gentlemen, hopefully next week we don't have Kai back here because he's stealing the good bourbon. But not only that, Kai, I have to thank you so much for the last 3 weeks because Victoria Greenwood, my co-host, she's been inundated with work. She's an actress, and she got a gig for 2 weeks, and then she had a wedding, and she has all of these obligations. And I think today was a service of life for someone in her family. So thank you for filling in for the last 3 weeks. It's been an absolute pleasure.
This has been a blast. Thank you so much.
I think I may bring you back one last time when Victoria is back here next week so we can fight over you and say, you know what, Victoria, he did a great job, but I will let you know that Kai may be back next week with the return of Victoria Greenwood, the better half of OK Boomer.
At which time you'll be able to see what you've been missing while you've been listening to me.
I want to thank you all very much. This has been OK Boomer. I'm Ralph. You're not. Have a great night.
Good job, Ralphie.
You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.